Hello, my name's Joel Dunning. Welcome to another CTSnet podcast, and this is a really special edition. Firstly, we're here at SCTS in Wales, in UK. It's our national biggest meeting of the year. And secondly, I have managed to grab a very special guest indeed, the wonderful, the only Professor Robert J. Cerfolio, or Surf. And he gives us some amazing insights, and he's done a stunning talk just now, half an hour ago, that blew us away with efficiency in hospitals. We've got a packed podcast as well. I'm going to tell you all about an amazing new meta-analysis in left main stem disease, donor resuscitation, and we've got some great videos. We've got robotic bilateral mammary harvest, and we've got an interview with Mark Ruel, which is also awesome. So loads on the podcast this week, so stay tuned, and I hope you enjoy our very special guest. So thank you so much for tuning into this CTSnet podcast. And today is a really special podcast because I'm here at the Society of Cardiothoracic Surgery of UK and Ireland in Wales. We're here for our national meeting. We've done some great sessions, been really interesting, certainly on the thoracic side. Chemo IO before surgery has been absolutely burning hot topic. Who do you do it on? Is it a 4.1 centimeter tumor and nothing else? Do they get chemo IO first? When do you do it? Do you wait 4 weeks? Do you do it earlier? How horrible are those lymph nodes? We've seen a few catastrophe videos on how to get out of it. So it's been really, really interesting. There's been loads of other sessions. There's been some brilliant aortic work. Professor John Pepper just got a Lifetime Achievement Award. We honoured the amazing Professor Marian Ionescu, who invented the Ionescu valve. Unfortunately, died this year, but having contributed a huge amount financially and with his inspiration to this society. So much going on here, and it's only the end of day two and a brilliant conference. So it is a wonderful conference. I've been with Steve Kasavi as well. He came over from the Mayo Clinic. He's been chairing a few sessions, and we had a wonderful session on Eric Lim on mesothelioma, saying that it should no longer be regarded as resectable, versus David Waller, who said, "What? You're crazy. There's still a subset of people we should operate on." But yes, Mars 2 was really interesting for telling us who we shouldn't operate on. But the thing that Steve Kasavi said, which I thought was really interesting, was he absolutely loved this meeting where surgeons could candidly talk about what they really thought in a professional way. And I think that is something about maybe these slightly smaller meetings. I think these slightly smaller meetings do allow people to really get down into the weeds, get down to the nitty gritty, and really talk the truth. We also had a wonderful talk by Bob Cerfolio, who said, "I'm going to cut all the baloney out of all the studies in robotic surgery." And he blew away the baloney and even talked about some randomized trials and critiqued them. He critiqued his own findings, but he said why there was value in robotics. Value to him was really outstanding outcomes, very fast surgery, really low reoperating rates. So I think that is one of the wonderful things about smaller meetings. We can really talk. We've got time to talk. We really get to know each other. We see each other for 2 days. So I'm so pleased that after COVID, when we all hid behind screens, we didn't get to really understand what each other were doing, that we're now back in full flow, out there meeting each other, which is really wonderful. So we do have this wonderful guest, Bob Cerfolio. So I will cut across to my chat that I've just had with him, and I hope you enjoy some of our words that we had together here at the SCTS. Hello, my name's Joel Dunning, and welcome to this CTSnet very, very special podcast. I'm delighted to be with the one and only Robert J. Cerfolio, or Surf to everybody. You're an incredible innovator. You've done 19,000 operations. You've done multiple thousands of robotic operations, but also you're a medical healthcare innovator and leader. And you're actually here at SCTS in Wales, in the United Kingdom, as the flagship speaker. And you've just knocked them for six, as we say in England. Or knock them out of the park, because you've been telling them about efficiency and quality and how to get the best out of your healthcare system. And and we've all got challenges. NHS is short of money, but it's applicable to every single healthcare system. So tell us a little bit about what you told this conference.
First of all, I'm so honored to be here, Joel, because you're the innovator, and we're honored and inspired by you and what you do. The innovation you're doing. Joel was just telling me how to do thymectomies better using an XI robot. So the truth is, he's the innovator, and and we're honored to be associated with you. So thank you. And thank you for the opportunity of A, speaking today at this beautiful, what a venue. I mean, what a gorgeous venue.
Great, isn't it? Yeah.
And just so many people there. And I think what we talked about today is, look, everybody's resources are limited, right? People think in the United States we have unlimited resources. We don't. We have more robots, maybe, and some of our hospitals are fancy, but some of them are not. At the end of the day, resources are limited. And so we are really pushing physicians to manage their patients quicker, faster, and better. And the example we gave was our lung surgery. Everyone goes home in 23 hours. We want it to really be, soon it's going to be without even being admitted, they're going to be on an outpatient centers. Because in the United States, when you do surgery in outpatient centers, yes, the hospital gets less money, but the costs are much less. And the patients don't really need to be admitted. So we can do this by using digital air leak systems and then challenging physicians' dogma. Surgeons, especially all doctors, but especially surgeons, have this heuristic, dogmatic attitude that what they're doing is the best and it can't get better. Everything I'm going to do tomorrow, and I've got, or on Wednesday, I've got 3 robotic lobes. Everything I'm doing there is probably wrong. Every step is probably wrong. I'm just not smart enough to figure out why I can do it better. And I think we should ask ourselves, how can we do it better? And we talked about we're trying to do lobes without putting tubes in. And I looked at my own data. We have 127 patients in that study now. There was only 70 were able to pull the tube out. And 7 of those 70 had to have either a pigtail catheter put back in the recovery room or got sub-Q air within 6 hours. So it hasn't been perfect. So would you submit that that innovation failed? If 7 out of 70 had a problem, maybe that's a failure. The other way to say, hey, 63 of the 70 patients came out of the OR and never had a chest tube after lobes and segments. Are we taking out 30, 40 lymph nodes in the right chest and 25 in the left? They don't get chyle, they don't get blood. Very few have had to have re-interventions. Of the 125, only two people have had ultrasound fluid and one got aspirated. So we're very strict in who will aspirate or not. They don't have a little effusion. So they go home sooner, they don't get readmitted. The tubes, they have no tubes, they don't need re-interventions on recurrent effusions. So this is just a very small way to innovate. And we challenge every doctor to try to do something. Do telemedicine to see your patients sooner. Find a way for your patients to contact you. I give them my cell phone. That's not scalable, okay? But find a way for your patients to get 24-hour attention, to get better experience. Every little thing we do to get patients better care, better experience, that's what we should do as physicians and administrators.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw at the conference when you started saying everyone goes home the next day from a lobectomy, people's eyes were popping out.
I saw that.
How do we make that happen? That sounds insane.
It's all culture and it's all communication. If you tell a patient at every touch point, both when, and we all do telemedicine, so we don't see people in the clinic anymore. We tell them on a telemedicine visit, you're going to go home the day after surgery. We tell them on the morning of surgery, you're having surgery in 20 minutes. It's going to take 2 hours. Hopefully you don't have a tube, but if you do, you'll go home. The tube will come out tonight.
Is it 90%? You call it a drain, don't you? Not a tube.
We don't call it a chest tube. We call it a drain because they've all had friends that went home with drains. So we say, you may wake up with a drain. We hope you don't. And you might have a drain even the next morning. We hope you don't. But at 7 a.m., if you have a drain, you're going to go home with that drain. And you'll text me a picture of it every day and we'll tell you when the drain can come out. So everyone knows they're going home at 7:30 a.m. the next morning. Why is that good for patients? It's good for patients in many ways. Less risk of infection, C. diff, COVID, getting the wrong medicine, not getting confused, sleeping in your own bed, getting breakfast at home, which is better than the hospital. And it's better for the hospital, so those 40 people in the ER waiting for beds and the 25 people coming out of the OR at 9 a.m. waiting for beds have beds. So it's better for everybody. It gives other patients better care. It gives that patient better care.
And I can hear people here shouting, wait a sec, he's got some hotel over the road, Surf Towers or something.
But
they're out of the Palace Hospital, staying local. But
I will say to the people that I do internationally, which is 20%, they do go to a hotel. They don't go home because they don't have a place. But the ones that live in the tri-state area, almost all of them go home. There are a few people who feel uncomfortable even going to Connecticut or say a place 2 or 3 hours away and they want to go to a hotel for the first day in case something happens. So they're right, those listening, that's a good criticism, but that's their own hesitancy and their own inability to feel comfortable with what I'm telling is fine. They do better at home, but about 10% do go to a hotel for a day or two. They text me, doctor, and I do make rounds in the hotel. There's a few hotels I will make rounds on, because I don't have anybody around them anymore. Everybody goes goes home. So I operate Monday, Wednesday. By Thursday morning at 8 a.m., there's no one around on Thursday afternoon or Friday. So occasionally Thursday afternoon when I leave the hospital at 5 or 6, I'll go to a hotel and see a patient, have a cup of coffee with them, or 6 p.m., have a glass of water with them.
That's crazy. And I guess one thing, a major theme of your talk was tough on quality, soft on people.
Yes.
So maybe tell us a few things about how you make that really happen.
I think that's a really important point, because we are so strict on our quality metrics. Like I said today, we'll just talk about lobectomy. 5N2 stations and 2N1 on every patient. Every patient. So if I get a pathology report and I check every one, and I have, let's say, a surgeon in Long Island who got only 4N2 stations and 1N1, or say only had 14 total lymph nodes. Now, on the left chest, there's not a lot of nodes, but we want at least 15 in the left chest and at least 23 in the right. And I got to call him and say, him or her, and say, what happened here? This is a failure. And I say, I do it in a nice, kind way, and say, come on. You couldn't find an 8. And usually I call a number 9 that's a little more, little closer to the esophagus, an 8. I said, just call that an 8. But we need a 9, an 8, and a 7, and a 5, and a 6 in the left, and a 9, 8, 7, 2R, 4R. So I make the call friendly, but they know I'm calling and then I'm watching. Even though we're 2.5 hours away from that hospital, I'm responsible for all their cardiac and thoracic quality. We want patients to get the best care in the world, and this is the only way to do it, but in a friendly, cordial way.
Yeah, and tell us a bit about these quality indices. For the lobectomy patients, you know, your thoracic surgery colleagues, you know, what exactly have you got on those that you're feeding back to them every day?
Yeah, so it's the hospital metrics of length of stay, observed to expected, 30-day mortality, 90-day mortality, and by observed to expected, we code all their comorbidities. Those are the hospital metrics, how much money you spend in the OR, how much time you spend in the OR. Then we add the quality metrics of lobectomy, which is, it's got to be under 2 hours and 10 minutes total anesthetic time. Yeah. Consult time's got to be under 9.
Skin to skin.
Skin to skin.
Yeah.
Consult time has, and total anesthetic time. So in the room, to incision has to be under 25 minutes. And when you close the skin, out of the room has to be under 17 minutes.
Yeah.
So you put those together with it and with a total time. But we have medical students who are teaching this, so closing takes time. We still want to teach. Then we get scores from the students and the residents and from the nurses. How well did we, what was our culture and behavior like? Because there were some behavior problems from surgeons when I got there, so this reins that in a little bit. And then quality metrics, like I said, 5N2, 2N1, total lymph nodes. How long the chest tube is in, we measure that, and that's part of the metric. What is the patient, what do the wounds look like? What's the readmission rate? So those are the quality metrics for lobectomy. Margin status has to be an R0 resection. You get dinged if it's not R0.
Yeah.
If you do a segmentectomy, you have to do a 3D scan beforehand and show that by 3D scanning, that we're going to get negative margins on that. So those are all the quality metrics, and they're specific for every operation, for our orthopods, for our neurosurgeons, for our psychiatrists. We have it for our infectious disease doctors. We have EQIs.
Yeah, and deep down, I know you're just a surgeon in love with surgery, and I'm so excited to hear that you're innovating with the new single port. You know, you do all this stuff, and yet you've still got time for innovation. You know, what is the next 3 years in robotic surgery going to be like? Is it SP? Is it new platforms? What is it?
Such a great question. I do think it's new platforms. I do think it's single incision or SP, but SP, of course, refers to Intuitive, and there are going to be other people in this venue who are going to and other companies that are going to come in and going to make it competitive. And we need, as you said, we absolutely need competition, because that's going to drive down the cost and improve the quality. So I think it's up to innovators like you, all the work that you're doing and others are doing in Brazil and elsewhere. I watch you, and I see what you're doing, and I see what people around the world are doing. And it's exciting. We want to inspire the innovators. They're going to be failures. There's going to be some outcomes that aren't great, but this is the only way to get through choppy waters, is to figure it out. And as I showed today, I showed mistakes I've made with my innovation, and it's humbling. But if you wrap innovation in a culture of safety to fail, where it's safe to fail, if you're going to fail, I want you to fail fast and hard. So we fail quickly. You don't want long failures. Say, that didn't work, let's try this. I think that's the key, is the culture wrapped around innovation.
Yeah, great. Well, you've been such an amazing inspiration to us all. I do your exact lymphadenectomy technique, having watched it in Alabama, literally to the node, because it's wonderful. It changed the whole way I do it. So you've been a complete leader in our field. So for myself, Joel Dunning, everyone in CTSNet, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Joel, for your time. God bless you.
So thank you once again, Bob Cifolio, for taking the time to see me just after giving the keynote address. He really was an inspirational person. And loads of cardiac surgeons came up to me going, who is this guy? This is amazing. We need to get metrics going. We need to work harder to be more efficient in our operating rooms. So thank you for that. On CTSnet this week, we've got some great articles for you. We've got three good articles and three great videos. The first one is by Kevin Kulstretha and David Morales, and it is published in the Annals of Thoracic Surgery this week. It's called An Up to an Hour of Donor Resuscitation Does Not Affect Pediatric Heart Transplant Survival. They've done a huge study. It says 28,012 pediatric heart donors between 2000 and 2021. This is the national database, the US Pediatric Heart Donor database, and they looked basically at people that had some amount of CPR. So you could have recovered from your CPR and gone into hospital and not been a brain survivor, or you had CPR for any reason, and they broke it down into people that had more than 55 minutes of CPR or less than 55 minutes of CPR. And once you went over 55 minutes, the post-transplant survival of the recipient did start to go down a little bit, mean 9.2 years versus 11 years for someone that received a heart from someone that hadn't had CPR. So I guess the message probably is, don't worry, if the CPR is less than an hour, you're still going to get a great heart out of this donor, and it's really good to keep cracking on. We actually analysed the UK's heart transplant data today, this morning, and we're pleased to see that heart transplants are doing really well, probably because of DC donorship, and we were a little bit disappointed to see that lung transplant is ebbing, becoming lower and smaller, and actually a task force has been created to try and get that number back up. But check out this paper that gives you some real positivity about not worrying too much about CPR in our donor, in our donors. Really nice paper in the SEJCTS this week by Francesco Pallari, by many other people from the Italian research group on outcomes in cardiac surgery. And the paper they have just published on the EJCTS is comparison of four mortality scores for the surgical repair of type A aortic dissection. So it's a really big issue because we think the STS score probably isn't up to predicting accurately aortic dissection outcomes. And there's a lot of discussions. There's just been a guideline in type A dissections that we talked about in a previous podcast, and actually in that they were actually recommending the GERADA score, the German Association Aortic Dissection score, and this paper looks at that score, the UK aortic score, the IRAD score, and the Kentofanti score, and it does look at all of them and how they do, and they look at figures from 10 European centres for discrimination and calibration, and basically headline is the GERADA score is best. So well done to Germany for creating this brilliant score. None of them are perfect. They haven't got perfect calibration discrimination, but you know, GERADA is best. So maybe that is what we should use in dissection. Have a look at that paper, see what you think. And the third paper we've got for you, I think, is really important for those of you doing revascularization surgery. It's by Stefano Urso, Rafael Sabada, and Victor Diane. So three great authors. It's in the European Heart Journal, and it's a brilliant, huge, big analysis of the benefits of coronary artery bypass grafting over PCI in left main disease, the strengths of the evidence. Basically, a really big meta-analysis laying out the randomized control trials and the big cohort studies, laying conclusively the evidence for the benefit of surgery versus PCI in left main stem disease. A lot of cardiologists are constantly sort of trying to say that, well, you know, they can do PCI, it's equivalent, it's close. But really, this paper is really saying that the probability of death at 5 years, there was an 85% probability that death at 5 years is greater with PCI than CABG. It's basically saying that CABG is best. Have a look at that paper. Have a look what these three great leaders in our field are saying about left main stem disease, and do stand up for those very high-risk patients that need bypass grafts to get past the future lesions as well as the lesions that exist. I'll hand over now to the CTSNet staff, where they'll tell you what else is on the website this week.
Thinking of submitting a surgical video to CTSNet? Head over to ctsnet.org to view the submission guidelines and send in your video today. CTSNet accepts videos demonstrating adult cardiac, congenital, and thoracic surgical procedures from CT surgeons, residents, and allied health professionals. Questions? Contact CTSNet support.
Thank you for sticking with us with this slightly bigger podcast. And I just wanted to briefly tell you about three videos you can find on CTSNet this week. We are kicking off our World's Best Center series at the Cleveland Clinic with an interview that I did there. And this interview, basically I set out what we were doing in the Cleveland Clinic. I did a little spotlight about the amazing surgeons that we videoed. We have Lars Svensson doing a valve-sparing root replacement with Faisal Bekeen, showing you what the best bypass grafts are. We've got Nick Smadira doing some phenomenal operations and plenty more. We've got interviews with staff. We've got radial artery endoscopic harvest, mammary harvest. We've got so much. So this is a bit of a kickoff video just to tell you what's coming, and I hope you enjoy it. The second video I really enjoyed was by Varun Bansal. He's got a great technique from India, the double docking technique for Beamer. And it's a lovely video about left-sided mammary artery harvest, then he redocks for the right-sided mammary harvest. He really likes docking on the other side because he can get so much extra length. He goes beyond the rema vein, he goes right up the subclavian artery and gets that rema from the origin. So he thinks, and I tend to agree, he probably gets a good 2 or 3 centimeters more by using this bilateral technique rather than just reaching across the chest as many people do. So if you like the idea of that and you want to try that robotically or even by VATS, you could do that, then check out that video. And the third video we've got for you is another interview that I've done. Oh God, I work for you guys, I tell you what. And this was an interview with myself and the wonderful Mark Rowell. Mark Rowell is just the most amazing surgeon. He's a wonderful, thoughtful, off-pump surgeon. And we'd actually done a series with him about the best techniques in off-pump surgery. And he really laid out in this video the changing face of coronary artery surgery, really fighting to say that we need revascular experts. You know, we've got aortic experts, mitral experts. You must have a revascular expert in your team. And he lays out the reasons for this. He lays out some of the really great innovative things that you can do and offer your cardiologists and patients. And I was really grateful to Mark Rowell for spending time with us at the recent STS meeting. So we're coming to the end of our podcast. Just to let you know, there's loads of things coming up. It really is conference season. We're delighted to be doing a joint webinar with the ASAIO on the 14th of March, so look out for that. And the 1st to the 12th of April, the London Core Review course is starting. Then, of course, we'll all be there at AATS on the 28th of April. And finally, where is Diego? Well, Diego has been trying out the new Shirui robot again in China. He's been posting videos, innovating, showing us new platforms. This Shirui robot, it's multi-arm, it's single-arm. So well done to him. And that's all for today. And perhaps, maybe, as my honourable mention, I will maybe just mention Professor John Pepper, who got a Lifetime Achievement Award here at the STS, a very, very deserved, a lifelong achievement in aortic cardiac surgery, did some thoracic surgery, and a wonderful guy. So my shout-out and honourable mention at the end of this podcast goes to Professor John Pepper.